Mr. Chadwick, Real 21, we were talking about your time with 1st Battalion, DLI, in Berlin. You just arrived in Berlin, early 1950. Other than the Spandau prison duties, what other duties would you have?
Well, I think Berlin could be classed as a massive training area. A lot of VIP visits. Royalty, cabinet ministers, you name it, some very senior members of the armed forces. Some of all the upgrades, which were always done down the Olympic Stadium. The whole 2 years we spent in Berlin, you were flat out, either socially, training-wise, sport-wise, or whatever. There was no... It was an outstanding station. It was a brilliant station.
What about your sport? How were you doing with your sport?
Oh, quite well. I won the BTA championships there.
BTA?
BTB, Big Stoops Berlin Championships, you know.
At what weight?
Well, this was swimming, really.
Oh, sorry.
That was the swimming side of it. The boxing side of it, I will explain. I didn't want to put this in, but I will. I had a bit of a setback. I boxed in Berlin on a Friday night, and I have been feeling well. But I shut that off. And I went to weigh in, and I knew all the people concerned. And no way of going about it. You're not allowed to give away more than £5 in ABU, Army Boxing Union rules. Well, I was under a landstone for a landstone 7 bout. And I said, I'm a bit scared, you know. So, in I went. And luckily, I knocked this boy out in the first round. That was all right. Didn't feel too good on Saturday. Feel too rosy on Sunday. Sunday night, I went to a friend's house, Laddie Burns' house, to drink. I didn't fancy it much, but I had a few gins, which I didn't drink. And I couldn't fancy any beer. And coming back, I collapsed in the street. Got up. Staggered to barracks for about 5 miles. I was too ill to get a tram or anything. I don't know how I got back. I was rushed into hospital and had a person also. Just came up. So sudden. And that knocked me out for a couple of months anyway, out of all sport. But made a cracking recovery, and 6 or 7 months later I was on my way to Korea, so I got away with that one, which I didn't think I would, but I did.
How did you train in them days? Because training's moved on a bit from the 50s, but if you had a big bout or swimming competition coming up, how much time and what would you do to get yourself in?
I didn't do much time. I totally argue this. When you were training for a boxing match, you were excused all duties. Nobody, Peter, can train more than 3 hours a day for any sport. Physical sports, I mean. I mean, if you train properly for 3 hours, that's as much as you can do. To leave ladders in barracks with all that spare time on the rounds is just undoing the training, because they were up the nappy, knocking a few pints back. I did agree to get a bit extra food and take them off guard duties. I always argued this. They were excused guards if they prepared to box. But that's the only thing they should have been granted. And say, every afternoon off, to go and train. But do the duties at morning, any night duty to them, but no guards. Extra rations and 2 or 3 hours training every afternoon.
And what would you do to get yourself in trim? What was your training routine?
Well, I always do, but I spent especially for boxing anyway. Go out and do some road work in the morning, 7 or 8 mile run. Come back, then have a shower, have breakfast. And then, of course, what I would like to have done was to carry on normal then through the day till about 3 o'clock and then gone to the gym for 2 hours, sparring, calisthenics, all were hitting the punch bag style, skipping, all that kind of stuff for a couple of hours, and that's a day's training. You can't do no more, not if you're doing it properly. If you do any more, you're burning yourself out. I mean, you weren't training for the championship of the world. It was just non-sport.
So anything else? What about the people in Berlin? Were they different from the Dortmunders?
Yeah, well, they were city people. You see, the Berliners relied so heavily on the military. Most of them worked for the military. All your wages in your messes were German wages. Officers' mess, sergeant's mess. Lots of the nappy staff were local enlisted personnel. You mixed with the Germans quite a lot. As I say, by now a lot of the lads are marrying them. And Berlin was just fabulous, actually. We had the Jabor Club in Berlin, which warmed up with some Sands Club. Massive. You name it. Everything was there. It was an outstanding station, a wonderful station.
And there was an excellent training there, you mentioned.
Oh, terrific. Go away for 6 or 7 weeks training.
So there was an accident.
The motor platoon was sent training to semi-lager for 3 weeks, just on our own, which was a brilliant thing. So off we went, self-contained, the whole platoon, got there, settled in, got his routine going. And then came the fatal day, ever remaining my history. And John Arnott and I said we would, the morning, I would stay on the motor line and supervise the motor line, how the drills went, at the speed of firing, by order, fire orders, etc., etc. And he would go out to the OP and take the NCOs and train them out there on the duties of the OP. At lunchtime, he decided, we would change roles. I would go out to the OP and he would take the motor line. Now, where the motors platoons were based, there were some trees in front, but we had clearance. Obviously, we bedded in and we had clearance. A very, very heavy downpour of rain came during the lunch break, so we took shelter. Off it went, but it's a very, very heavy downpour of rain. I moved off then with 3 or 4 NCOs, mortar plotters and everything, to test them on controlling fire. Went out there, got his range and line everything sorted out, and then called for fire. And the very first bomb that came out, well, the first 6 bombs that came out, hit the trees above. And the first I heard about it was the German range warden screaming in German, soldiers had been wounded in the head. So straight onto the Bremgun carrier, and shot back past the recordings like a battlefield. We got there before the German ambulances. Luckily, there was no one dead, but very seriously injured. It was a very, very serious accident, actually. And what had happened, the underload for the rain that had weighted the tree branches down. And that difference made that the initial bombs hit those trees. But once it got the inertia set back, a burning flight would set it off. You know, it's all what they call a ball and detent spring. And it's like being in a bus. If it stops suddenly, you go forward. Well, if that hits anything, the mechanism moves forward and explodes. So these 10-pound bombs blowing up right over the motor line. So the amount of shrapnel that was lying around was nobody's business.
Were many of the lads wounded?
Very badly. Oh, yes.
But how many? I mean, all...
One horrifically wounded. We never saw him again. I can't just remember. There was a very, very good inquiry. Really, I was at the inquiry, but not being on the motor line, I wasn't really involved, thank God.
Did anyone get the blame, or was it not a blame thing?
God bless his soul. 3 or 4 months before he died, I was still talking to him at the reunion. And I said, I don't think either of us will ever forget Berlin and the mortars. He said, no. He said, but everything was cleared up. Everything was cleared up later. It was found out it was faulty. I don't believe it. There was faulty mechanism in the box. It was a genuine accident, but it shouldn't have happened. But no, there was no, he didn't suffer no loss of rank or reprimands or anything. He was clear, thank God. And most of the lads all recovered, but one never. He was sent away. I don't think he'd be any use anymore. He was very badly wounded. As the chairman said, all in the cuff, all in the head. Got a lot. Other than that, as I say, summed it up in 2 words, a fabulous station. Absolutely a wonderful time. Sorry to leave.
How did you come to leave? I mean, you went to Korea, I know, but how was it an emergency move?
No. Go on the line of march, what we call the line of march. And we got orders that we were career bound.
Now, when exactly was that? Rough.
Well, January, February.
51.
52. Yes, 52. When, I remember it because the king died in February. Round about that time, we got orders, we were career bound.
What did you feel about that? Because you were in a good station, you're going to go off to fight.
A lot of us were looking forward to that. That's what I liked doing. But although none of us would admit it, we were all stuck to it. Tony Carter and me, Tad Evans, all the lads. And I thought, where is Korea? Because I understood it, and I loved geography. I couldn't place where this Korea was. And with a big map of the world painted on one of the gable ends of the barracks. So I nipped out the nest and went to look at this map. So when I come back, I said, God, I've gone this hell of a way from here. We're nearly on the way back when we sail out to there. So, as I say, now I do regret to say this, but I'm going to say it. I was very, very disappointed. Because talk about when the ship sailed, the rats leave. There was blokes in really compassionate grounds who were. They got their wives who were suffering traumas. And there was fellas came in from all the light infantry units to join us to replace these sans. This is in the sans mess. To replace the sans as some the time was coming up. For finishing, but we knew they were going to sign on, but they wouldn't sign on until we'd gone. So they all went to the 2nd Battalion Durham's that was in Wuppertal. So we left that behind, and we came home about May back to the UK. And straight away, which I thought was back to front, we all went on 3 weeks leave. Yes, we all went on 3 weeks leave. Correction, sorry. We came home. No. We went on 3 weeks leave, came back, and then we went on 3 weeks concentrated training in the Catterick area. And by now, Michael Hamry had left the battalion, and the COFC industry was over. Brigadier Peter Jeffries, you may have heard of him. And he came down from Brigadier to take the battalion so that him and his father had both commanded the same battalion. And as we found out later, after our touring career, he left the army. That was his swan song. He just wanted to come in the 1st battalion.
Now, what were your initial impressions of Jeffries?
Well, we knew about him.
What did you know about him?
Well, he was a disciplinarian. He was a good all-round soldier. He had a good record. But I always wanted to form my own conclusions. And I got to know him extremely well. And he was brilliant.
What was brilliant about him then?
Tell you more about that when we hit clear. But initially, the exercise he conducted in Korea, we were watching the senior ranks. We knew not what was going on.
You mean the exercises at Catterick?
At Catterick. The way they were planned. And he hammered us. And he hammered himself. He led by example. He was always up there. Day and night, he was creeping around every position. Rifle companies, support weapons, whatever. He was there non-stop. He did a first-class job.
Was there anything new about the exercises you were doing, or was it just more...
Same stuff. Same old stuff. But the exercises were purely to get the leave out of the system and get us fit. But I thought it was a bit futile because we're going to spend 6 weeks on the trooper after that.
So, you had this period of concentrated training.
And then down to the beach. Finished on Friday night, and we left Monday morning. We marched through the city on Saturday, Freedom of the City, Durham City. And then I went the advance party to Southampton to the Empire Trooper. It was called the Empire Trooper.
And what about the voyage out? Quite a long voyage.
But everywhere we stayed after Gibraltar, starting at Gib, we went ashore and did a 20-mile route march with Colonel Jeffries leading.
Were they tough after you'd been aboard all that time? Were they tough to do with your feet soft and everything?
Well, Up to gym, which only took about 3 days, it weren't too bad. Later on, it was telling, as they eat, as the grandfather eats. We went ashore, in Colombo, Singapore, Hong Kong, and then, of course, we went on to Busan.
What kit had you been equipped with, the uniform? Were you in the olive green, or what?
Oh, all of the olive greens were either in Korea with us. Oh, we're all fully kitted out.
So you had olive green drill.
Olive green drill.
And did you have, because Korea isn't always hot, did you have a full uniform with you?
Not then.
And what, anything about the voyage before you got there? Anything special?
No, I've got plenty of PT. We get to stick tennis. We have a couple of boxing matches on there. A little into country boxing matches. Got social life in the science mess lounge. A lot of idle time. One long journey. They weren't the fastest of ships. Everybody just about had enough by the time we got the other end.
Now, when did you get to Korea? Do you know the
about the end of August, approximately.
52. And what were your initial impressions? Where did you land up in Korea?
We landed at Busan. Again, marched straight off the boat, up to the railhead, jumped on trains, and I think we went to Wee Jongbu, a big railhead. And a massive camp there. What the army calls a concentration area.
Was it a British or an Allied concentration area? I mean, was it just British?
Oh, no, Commonwealth. Because we were the Commonwealth day.
And what were your initial impressions of the sort of country it was?
Well, it was a rough terrain. Scotland. Nothing but mountains and hills. Sparse. Hardly any poplins.
And what about the sort of climate at that time of the year?
At that time, it wasn't too bad. Quite nice and warm. In summer, it was scorching. And reverse in winter, but we'll come to that. We were only there about 48 hours when we moved forward, ready for going in the line. And then the day after, we moved forward. I forget the name of the places now. We weren't interested. We were going in the line that day, that night. And also then, but we all had showers, clean kit on, and everything. And I'm still with the motors. And as we started to move forward, that end zone, there's nothing worse than going in the line wet through. We set off then, going towards the FDLs.
Forward Defence Lounge.
And the first thing that struck me, I was flabbergasted. I was leading the platoon in the forward carrier. The Americans were on the MSR, the main supply route, routing us, which way to go. And we were going to Nha Trang. Our first position.
Now, how do you spell that?
N-A-C-H-O-N. And I looked in the sky, and I said to the lads around me, I've never seen anything like this in my life. So when the convoy was halted, the Yanks, the little children, I was saying, what's the score here, pal? What's the illuminations about? And he said, you've seen that before, I said, I've never seen anything like it before.
What was it?
Artificial moonlight. A massive, massive massive searchlight. And it was more or less shining on us. But it was helping with the movement of troops, but there were no lights. So all the vehicles have no lights on. Nobody's supposed to be first. And there's this damn big artificial moonlight. And I never saw it used when we were in action. But it was dark, pitch dark. And this thing got switched on. I couldn't credit it. It's always stuck in my mind, that artificial moonlight. And from there then, we moved up into his relevant positions.
Now, what were these positions? This is at Nechom. And what was the nature? Were you in the front line?
Well, we're on the front line.
What was the setup of the front line?
Well, we're getting back down a little bit. The First World War was like. It was trench warfare. And you were dug in. And you had, replaced the word dug out with hoochie. You had hoochies. Huts. Sandbag. Every sandbag.
Now, what were the front line trenches like? Were they, could you describe them? I mean, were they connected together?
The communication trenches you could walk down. All heavily sandbagged. All pre-dug in. Everybody took the same positions. And of course, you had two rifle companies forward. One rifle company in reserve. 3-inch mortars in a platoon position. Vickers were on the move. They were split up. You'd get a Vickers 2-inch company, one with a reserve company, or where they were called for. Anti-tank role was pretty non-existent.
Now, you've got communication trenches leading forward. Now, what happened when you got to the front line? What was it like?
Well, you have all your wire there, and of course you always take up a position on the dominating feature. So you're on the top of the hills, all the way along the line.
And was it a continuous front line, or just a series of slit trenches?
Right, the whole way across the country.
A line?
On the 36th parallel. Right,
so it wasn't slit trenches like in Italy?
No, these were communication trenches. Big communication trenches, you could walk down them, carry stuff down them, all well done. You could be working on them daily.
But the front line was like that as well?
That was the front line. That was the front line.
How deep would it be?
Not deep.
Would they have a fire step, a parados?
It was fire steps. But when you come to the winter, you can realise why there wasn't really that much going on for that. Because standing out there in winter was no joke.
Well, did they have bays and like a proper trench?
You had ammunition bays where your ammunition was stored. That was dug into the ground. The same thing in advance and before the winter. Any digging that you want doing, whether it be DTLs or whatever.
DTL?
The trench machines. Anything of that. Any digging, any new trenches, any new fighting base, you have to dig them before November. Because there was no digging after it. Digging was finished. You couldn't dig anything.
Why?
Frozen. When you relieved in the line with a mortar platoon, you took off your barrel, you took off your tripod, but you left your base plate in, because you couldn't get it out.
Now, still, because that's to come, so to speak. So you'd have the front line trench, and then there'd be communication trenches going back from it, would there?
Oh, yes.
And
down to your admin area, where you'd have a little cookhouse dug in.
And what about in the front line? You say you had hoochies. Would they actually be in the front line?
Oh, yes.
Rather than dugouts?
They were dugouts.
That's just what you call them, hoochie.
That was a clean name, hoochie.
And what were they like? Can you describe a typical hoochie?
Sonic timbers, 4 to 5 layers of sandbagging on top, and you realise why shortly.